Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manapro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Thursday, April 14th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click on our Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on into the chat room, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about our hobby and passion of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, anything else that might tickle your fancy. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. When you do that, you will get one update about an hour before the show starts, just as a reminder that, hey, we go live in about an hour. Come and join us. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. Again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro.
Everyone has heard of Manapro, but not everyone knows that Manapro is a company that makes the care and nutrition of your animals the absolute highest priority. The animals in our lives are a lot of things: pets, friends, providers, gardeners, and entertainment. So we want to take care of them with the same dedication with which they take care of us. That's why Manapro is 100% committed to one thing above all else: nurturing life. Visit manapro.com for more information.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try Manapro's oyster shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try Manapro's oyster shell for your pullets and layers.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink.
A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your HenSaver aprons today at HenSaver.com. That's HenSaver.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Thursday. I told you we'd get through this week together because tomorrow is almost Fun Friday. We're almost there, folks, so hang in there. It's now time to introduce my wonderful co-host, host, advocate, author, multi-talented, coffee-aholic.
Coffee-aholic? You forgot young this time.
Oh, yep, young and a coffee-aholic.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to have a good day here today, Whisper. Oh, wow. I got to tell you, this is another one of these stunning, perfect spring days. How are you doing down there? I mean, it just couldn't be more beautiful here.
It's very nice here, too, but we do have some spring storms coming through Friday night.
Four.
Early Saturday morning. Yep, there's a big line coming through, and they're saying hopefully it'll die down a little bit before it gets to us, but they're saying possible another tornado outbreak through the deep south here, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, and possibly Georgia. So we're going to keep an eye on that for us and everybody else. So if you're in the path of this storm, bunker down we'll and good luck to you.
These storms have been the winds have been so strong here in the Shenandoah Valley, unseasonably so. So I got out my homeowner's insurance policy yesterday to look at it to see if I had tornado or a storm damage. And as it turns out, they have that as a separate category, wouldn't you know? So I do have it, but I've got $1,000 deductible. So at least now I know if my roof blows off, it only cost me $1,000. Yeah, I need a new one anyway. It'd probably be a blessing. But oh dear! But that is something to consider, folks, about your storm insurance and earthquake insurance. I mean, usually they're riders, so if you want to consider beefing it up during these interesting weather patterns we've been having, that might be something to take a look at.
And definitely flood insurance as well.
You have flood insurance?
Well, if you need it, because flood insurance is, you always hear the horror stories after a flood about people not being covered.
Oh, yes, horrible. Or earthquakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all separate riders, flood and earthquakes and I guess hurricanes, so Anyway, I'm covered. Hope you're covered. I'm sure that strong little 100-year-old house down there is probably sturdier than a lot of these new-built ones, these new little flimsy fab models.
I don't know. We'll see. It's handled the test of time, so we'll just you never know, though. You never know. So, but I'm glad you're doing well. It is a beautiful spring day here in Atlanta. I hope it's a beautiful day where you're at, wherever you're listening from today. We have a wonderful show lined up for you. We'll have a little bit of host chat, then we'll have some chickens in the news, and then about half past the hour, we're going to welcome our guest today, Richard Freudenberger. He is the publisher and technical writer at Back Home Magazine. You can visit them online at backhomemagazine.com, and today he's going to be teaching us how to build a simple top bar beehive. A simple top bar beehive. That's going to be today on the show. Really looking forward to that. So, once again, I find myself repeating myself. Get that spiral notebook out, get that pen, and get ready to take some notes on how to build a simple top bar beehive from our good friend Richard Freudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. So we've got that going on. Before we get into chickens in the news, a couple of announcements, things that are going on. Well, you may want to come out tonight and tomorrow night to learn a little bit more about starting your backyard poultry flock. Let's start with tonight. If you are within driving distance of Nitro, how about that? I didn't know there was a town called Nitro, but Nitro, West Virginia.
I've been there.
Oh, have you? Cool. Yep. So Town and Country Supply in Nitro, West Virginia is hosting a live Getting Started with Backyard Poultry webinar tonight at 6:30 p.m. I will be the, of course, guest speaker. You want to come on out and join the fun. They are located at 4400 First Avenue in Nitro. Again, that's the Town and Country Supply in Nitro, West Virginia, hosting a live webinar tonight with yours truly. It should run from about 6:30 to 8:30. It's about a two-hour informational webinar. And it's at 4400 First Avenue in Nitro, West Virginia. And again, the Town and Country Supply. So if you're within a driving distance, come on out. They'd love to see you there. And it will be a webinar, so you'll come in. And I'm not sure the total aspect there regarding snacks and drinks or what have you, but head on out. And it will be webinar-based. They're all set up. We did a test run earlier today. We're going to do another test run at 5:30. I will be broadcasting the webinar from CW headquarters here in Atlanta. But they've already got everything set up there in the feed store with the big screen and the projector and the whole nine yards. And it will be live. I will see you live. You will see me live. I can take questions live. The whole nine yards. That'll be tonight. So if you're in the West Virginia area, stop on by Town and Country Supply in Nitro. Then tomorrow night, for all of our Connecticut friends up there in Connecticut, we'll be doing also another webinar at the BSF in Litchfield. I believe that stands for Blue Seal Feeds, Blue Seal Feeds Farm and Garden Store in Litchfield, Connecticut. They're hosting a live Getting Started with Backyard Poultry webinar tomorrow night, but it starts at 6 p.m., 6 o'clock p.m. Again, I'll be the guest speaker there. You want to come out. It's going to be held at the, let me see if I can pronounce this right, Wamago, W-A-M-O-G-O, Wamago Regional High School, and that's on at 98 Wamago Road in Litchfield, Connecticut. It'll be in room 600 in the Ag Wing, in the Ag Wing of the high school. So that's tomorrow night, Friday, at 6 p.m. Eastern. Come on out, BSF Feeds in Feed Store in Litchfield, Connecticut, hosting a Getting Started with Backyard Poultry webinar again at the Wamago Regional High School, 98 Wamago Road, Litchfield, Connecticut, room 600. In the Ag Wing. So if you're up there in the Connecticut area, then swing on by tomorrow night. They're going to have a good, good time. Let me look at something here. Because I saw something, depending on where you're at. And I want to see if I've got my information right. So give me just a second.
While you're looking there, Whisper, I've got a couple of announcements, too.
Go ahead.
Okay, that'll give you a chance to check that out. May 5th at the Buckingham Extension Office, I'll be giving a talk on chickens and you. It'll be at 5:30 at the Buckingham Extension Office, and that's Buckingham, Virginia, and it's close to Richmond, Richmond, Virginia, Charlottesville, Lynchburg. It's about not too far from me, about an hour and a half to get over there. And then on Wednesday, April 20th at 6 o'clock at Indiana University, I'll be giving a talk there for Earth Week, and this will be at the School of Public and Environmental Affairs, my alma mater, I'm pleased to say, and it'll start at 6 o'clock at the School of Public and Environmental Affairs school right there in Bloomington, Indiana. So that's what's coming up with me. And then one more little thing. Did you find what you were looking for?
I did. I wanted to make sure this was confirmed before I announce it. But if you're in the West Virginia area and can attend tonight at the Town and Country Supply, I got an email that says they're serving dinner, and we'll have brownies decorated with baby chicks on them. So I don't know what dinner consists
messy.
Of. Yeah, I don't know.
That's what raised baby chicks, you know.
Yo,
new
goodness.
Form of litter, huh?
Yeah, but I don't know what dinner consists of. I just got an email that says we are serving dinner and we'll have brownies decorated with baby chicks on them. And they're also going to do a kids craft as far as making little chicks. If they have a lot of children show up, they will have an area for the children to do a chicken craft during the webinar tonight. And let's see.
That'll be fun.
It's going to be an awesome time. Let's see if there's anything else. Hang on. Da-da-da-da-da. They have some,
that's the one of Nitro, right, Whisper? Nitro, West Virginia?
Yes, tonight. The one tonight. Town and Country. Yep, tonight in Nitro, West Virginia. You can go out. It says they're serving dinner, and I'll have brownies for everybody. And very, very cool. And again, the webinar, you have to be there to take part in the webinar. Some confusion there in the chat room. So what it is, you go physically, drive or walk or ride your bike or take your spaceship, and you take it directly to the feed and seed store. And you go in, walk around. I guess tonight you can have dinner and a brownie, and then you'll get situated, and they'll have a big movie screen with their hook connected to their laptop and their projector, and voila, there will be me on the movie screen, and we'll be again for about 2 hours doing a backyard poultry workshop. So I will not be standing there live, or you can come up and shake my hand and get my autograph and what picture and what have you. But I will be there live. You'll just see me live on the screen. So I'll be able to see you when you raise your hand for a question. You'll be able to see me as I yap along about raising backyard poultry. So a little bit different than being able to participate in the webinar in the comfort of your home. We offer this to Feed and Seeds all across the country, where they set up and have a live webinar. They get me live, but I'm not there live, so there's so they don't have to pay travel cost, airfare, train fare, hotel, gas, fee, all that kind of stuff. It's a little bit more affordable regarding the travel cost for these feed and seeds all across the country to have me there. So that's what these two, tonight and tomorrow night, you have to be there in person. And at least tonight, you're going to get supper. So how cool is that? So I just wanted to clear that up in the chat room as well. So with travel cost, it is very expensive, especially for me to go all the way up to Connecticut, take the train, plane, rent a car, hotel, food stipend, all that kind of stuff. It gets quite expensive. So a lot of people do partake in that. You know, we travel around the country a lot, but this is another option for our feed and seeds across the country and anybody else for that matter to do the webinar. So that's how that works for those in the chat room. So very, very cool. And you had another one, Pat, you said?
No, I'm good for now. There's some coming up later in May and June, but let's not look too far ahead. My mind doesn't go that far anymore. It seems like time is morphing somewhat. So 1 or 2 weeks ahead is enough for me.
Not a problem. I'm trying to see. Here we go. I'm going to read this one here. As far as chickens in the news, we'll go ahead and get right to our chickens in the news segment. Chickens in the news is brought to you by Meyer Hatchery up in Polk, Ohio. Meyer Hatchery. Visit them online when you're ready to order some chicks this spring. MeyerHatchery.com, where you can, I think, order a small number of chicks too, maybe as few as three there as well at Meyer Hatchery. But check them out at MeyerHatchery.com. All righty, this comes to us from about.com. about.com, and it was written by Doris Lynn, and the title of it is, we may have talked about this a little bit before, maybe we had a news segment on it, Bill's ban to undercover factory farming videos moving ahead in Iowa and Florida. Bills to ban undercover factory farming videos moving ahead in Iowa and Florida. One of the best tools the animal protection movement has against factory farming is the truth, and a picture is worth a thousand words. But special interests are trying to take those tools away from activists in Iowa and Florida by trying to ban the making of undercover factory farm videos. Iowa. In Iowa, HF 589 creates the crime of animal facility interference for shooting a photo or video without the facility owner's consent and animal facility fraud for those who obtain employment at a farm for the purpose of shooting undercover photos and videos. Supporters of the Iowa bill claim that the videos are frequently staged and that trespassers shooting undercover videos will spread disease to the livestock. Trespass laws already address the problem of trespassers, and if the videos are staged, why should anyone care about undercover videos? The bill has already passed the House in Iowa and will go to the Senate next, Matt Rice of Mercy for Animals points out. Legislation should focus on strengthening animal cruelty laws, not prosecuting those who blow the whistle on animal abuse. If producers truly cared about animal welfare, they would offer incentives to whistleblowers, install cameras at these facilities to expose and prevent animal abuse, and they would work to strengthen animal abuse laws to prevent animals from needless suffering. What you can do in Iowa. Iowa residents can contact their state senators, blah, 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 blah. Okay, in Florida, Senate Bill 1246 was introduced to prohibit farm photography without the owner's consent. It was quickly called unconstitutional, but a new version of the bill has just passed out of the Senate Agricultural Committee. The new version has exceptions for law enforcement and other government agents and now specifies that the photographer must enter the property without the owner's consent to be in violation of the law, and a violation is now a misdemeanor and no longer a first-degree felony. These changes address some of the concerns about the original bill, but Jeff Kerr, an attorney for PETA, believes the new version is still unconstitutional. So, again, I've got a couple of states here in the union that are trying to ban any type of photography, any type of video, whether it's done, undercover, where someone goes, they get a job, and then maybe they do have intentions of getting a job to try to get some video of things that just aren't right at these farms. And then posting them or sharing them with the world on, say, YouTube or their websites. And so, sure, do they have a underlying reason to do this? Possibly. But, I know of a lot of daycare centers that have installed cameras to give the parents peace of mind. They can log on their BlackBerry, their iPhone, their computer to their child's classroom and see kind of what's going on to check up on some things. I know a lot of daycare centers are doing that. So, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of government. I'm not a big fan of Big Brother. But I surely have posted some really gruesome videos on our Facebook page about the abuse, and it's just sickening to see some of that stuff. I don't know how you stage somebody hitting a cow's udders with a pitchfork. I don't know how you stage that. I don't know how you stage somebody walloping and hitting a cow or a calf in the face 100 times with his fist. I don't know how you stage somebody kicking a cow. I don't know how you stage that stuff, and so you're like, I don't get it. So, I just again, part of you says, and I hate this comment. Well, if you have nothing to hide, then why not allow video? I'm not a big fan of that because I could just say, well, then why do you have curtains on your bedroom window? If you have nothing to hide. How far are you going to take it? So, So, again, very interesting here. We'll try to follow this and see. I mean, it looks like so far it's passed everywhere it needs to pass. I guess it's going to the Senate, going to the House in these states. So we'll see what happens. But so far from this article, it looks like it's going to pass both in Iowa and Florida. But, it's interesting. See what happens. To see if any videos come out of this. And if so, what kind of success they'll have prosecuting somebody that does this. So be interesting to see how that happens. You got any chickens? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's a comment in the chat room from Dragonfly Farms. He says that he's have worked in slaughterhouses a couple of times and honestly have not seen the abuses claimed. But of course, it only takes one or two to do it. And I think that's where the clarion call for transparency is what really it takes to make sure that animals are humanely treated. Because as soon as things start happening behind closed doors and closed to the public and closed to any kind of scrutiny, that's when abuses do tend to start. So it certainly isn't everyone, but there are abuses that are happening, and chickens are the bottom of the bottom when it comes to abuse. So God bless them. Yeah,
and people are saying, you know, if the food they're raising is for public consumption, then maybe the public, all the stuff there should be public. So,
absolutely.
You know, and kind of interesting, you know. It's tough, but the animals need to be taken care of, and people will say, well, what does it matter? The chicken's going to be killed and fried up for somebody to eat anyway. Well, you know, and I've said this several times on this radio show, because people will say, well, they're being raised to be killed anyway. I don't know what the big deal is. You're going to kill them and eat them, or they're going to go to KFC. Well, yeah, but you know, you think about this. There is a quality of life from the day you're born until the day you die. And just because maybe a human gets cancer doesn't mean that they can be treated like crap because their life is going to be shortened. Or maybe you get a disease and you know that, you know, you've got 3 weeks, 6 months to live, whatever the case may be. There's still a quality of life until then. Just because these animals are being raised, I had a lot of comments on the Facebook page about, you know, we raise meat birds to feed our family, and they are treated with the utmost respect until it is their time to feed our family. And we teach that in our children, that you treat these animals with respect. And many of them have said, point blank on our Facebook page, we tell them thank you and for their service to our farm and for feeding us and all of that before they go and call them to process them to feed their family. And so there is that, yes, the end outcome is feeding humans for survival. But at the same time, there is that quality of life until that time comes. Just because you get a disease that will end your life doesn't mean now I can abuse you and put you in horrible conditions and things like that. So it's that's the point I make when people say that. So it's
Well, you know, the movie Temple Grandin. I would so encourage everyone to watch that movie. It's just a wonderful, wonderful movie. Not only about humane processing of beef cows, but also autism and how people think differently, and we need to respect that. But one of the scenes at the end there, Whisper, is one of my favorites, where she's saying, you know, until they die, they're individuals and they deserve our respect. And they're here to serve us and they deserve our respect. And then once they become meat, then of course it's a different story. But Temple Grandin, it won 3 Emmy Awards, I think it was, and just an amazingly eye-opening show.
Wow.
I didn't realize until I saw the movie Temple Grandin that I think in pictures like not quite as brilliantly as Temple Grandin does, but I'm a pictorial, and I never really realized that people didn't before. So that was quite an affirmation for myself. And here I am, you know, at this phase of my life. But so anyway, I just wanted to say that. I got a couple more announcements. Whisper, can I just throw these out here pretty fast as we move into chickens in the news?
Go right ahead.
Okay, well, one of them is, this is from the Shenandoah Valley Poultry and Garden Club, and I'm pleased to say I think there's going to be 2 more poultry and garden clubs in the valley coming up very soon, one in Waynesboro and one down in Lynchburg. That's in the makings anyway, but this, I'm just bringing this up to show you that the Poultry and Gardens Clubs, they're also about sustainable living, and for the April 21st meeting, it will be in Lexington, Virginia, at the old courthouse, the public meeting room, 6 o'clock. They're going to talk about household tool sharpening is one topic. I mean, how many times have you used that dull knife? And, of course, a dull knife is a dangerous knife. I was always taught by my grandfather. So they're going to talk about how to sharpen your own tools. Then they're going to talk about during the vegetable part, they're going to talk about what plants can be directly sowed, meaning just thrown on the ground and covered over, to start the maize frost-free transplanting season. And then finally, they're going to have a little bit about poultry to talk about the difference between the Easter egg Araucana and the Americana breeds. So there's been some confusion about what Araucanas are versus Americanas. So that's the Shenandoah Valley Poultry and Garden Club. Anyone out there across the country that wants to start a poultry and garden club will be glad to help you out. It combines local and backyard food production with keeping and employing your family flock. So the only other one I've got here, this is a fun one, Whisper, is from the American Poultry Association. I just got their newsletter, and this is from the president, Sam Brush. And mm-hmm. what Sam says, this is cute. He says, the American Poultry Association, the beginning of 2011, has been a bit of a roller coaster ride. The first 3 months of the year seem to suggest we were heading towards the next ice age. Rather than wilting from global warming, they had some shows in some really severe weather. So many poultry folks across the country began exploring options for frozen comb insurance. you've got this great showbird, and it's just like a true champion, and then it gets frostbite. That's like the kiss of death. So anyway, frozen comb insurance, that one got me cackling a little bit. And here's the funny part. The Chanticleer breeders were busting their buttons with pride over having chosen to raise such a cold, hardy, and resistant breed. So anyway, I just thought that was cute. And then they go around, of course, with information from the different districts and what shows are coming up. So I love those newsletters. I always learn something from it. That's all I've got, Whisper.
Very good. That's not look at the chat room. That is not a problem. Thank you for sharing that. And, yeah, you can start your own group with meetup.com, and it's great. And a lot of meetup groups were featured on the Today Show this past Monday. So very good. That's a great opportunity to meet others locally. To keep chickens and do gardening and sustainability, that is absolutely correct. So, all righty. Well, that's going to wrap up some chickens in the news. I did hear back from Washington, D.C., about the animal disease traceability program. It's basically what I got was I contacted who I thought would be a contact there, and I've got other contacts, but regarding this was the gentleman's name who was given to me by the secret caller. But they basically sent me the website that I had already posted to everybody yesterday with the PDF and whatnot. And then, of course, I'm going to follow up with Dr. Smeltzer, who helped me. And that was my co-host for the webinar we did back in November, Keeping Your Bird and Flock Healthy through USDA APHIS. So it's going to be, I will contact Dr. Smeltzer. He is a vet. He may end up being our local vet here once this plan gets implemented. And I say once this plan gets implemented because, again, word on the street from I've heard is that this isn't going to be voluntary. They're going to push this through. They want to put this is hot and heavy right now, and they want to push this through. Regardless of what kind of stink people put up, like they did last few years with NIIS. So I'm on it, folks, and I will bring you any information that is pertinent regarding this and how it will affect us. So as backyard breeders, backyard keepers, and, of course, the show poultry, I think it's going to affect the people who show poultry a lot more than if you just have 6 birds in your backyard for a few eggs in your neighborhood, because you transport those birds across straight lines to show them. So it's going to affect you much, much more. So it's going to be interesting. And, of course, it's going to affect the McMurray hatcheries and the Ideal poultries and the Mount Healthy, because they're shipping chicks all over the country. So it's going to affect them very much so as well. So I may have to give them a call, our friends at the Big Hatcheries, and see if they're aware of this and if they've got any heads up on that as well. But I'll keep you posted. It's about 1:30 the hour. It's now time for a commercial break. And when we come back, guess what? Get that spiral notebook out, because we're going to be learning all about Beekoop, how to make Beekoops. We're going to learn how to make Beekoops today.
Oh. Oh, I love it.
Yes.
It.
So stay with us. Oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, we're going to welcome Richard Frudenberger with Back Home Magazine, our good friend. He's going to come on and teach us how to make Beekoops. coming up right after this short break. A little coop for your bees.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Oh, I can't stop laughing, Pat.
Oh, bee coops. Well, you know, it's an when you think about it, beehives are little bee coops. And if you really do the birds and the bees, I mean, my chickens can roam around the beehives. So they've never tried to get into one, but they have roamed around them.
It just sounds so funny, bee coops. Oh, my word.
I think it sounds cozy. It's really cozy.
Either way. Oh, my goodness. It's now time to welcome our guest today. I know. Richard Friedberger, sorry to bring you in on this bee coop topic. We thank you for joining us today.
That's fine.
Welcome, Richard.
Yes. Hello,
of course,
Pat.
We know Richard, our special guest today, is a publisher and technical writer for Back Home Magazine, and we're going to talk about making simple top bar beehives instead of bee coops. So, just wanted to clear the decks here a little bit for you, Richard. So, welcome.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, sure. I thought this time of year, it's April now, and by now a lot of people in our and at least in the Southeast have already ordered their bees and have been involved in probably picking them up at this point, pickup times. I don't know if many of your listeners know how it works, but if you're a beekeeper, and you're especially the beginning beekeepers, they After a while, you sort of learn how to split the colonies and make more bees from the bees you already have. But for a lot of people, just going to the beekeeper supply or picking them up at a place where they sell beekeeping supplies, if you have one nearby or within a few hours, is the way to go. And they and you can buy a package of bees, or you can buy what they call a nucleus family of bees, and I can explain that a little later. But you know, now is the time of year when people are starting to install their bees from now on into the season a little bit. And you know, I belong to a beekeepers association, a little club here in the county, and you know, we have a lot of the beginners. They always are a little surprised sometimes by the cost, and it didn't. From what I understand, it didn't used to be as expensive, but the fact is that, you know, there's suppliers and there's equipment and there's startup costs and all that, and it can get a little pricey to keep bees in any number. A lot of people start with maybe one or two hives. I think probably two is better personally. I mean, one is it's always nicer to have two, because you can sort of see a relationship, you have a little more numbers there and whatever, but you know, just the cost of the hive box. It's just the cost of the supers and the hive boxes and the little wooden frames with the wax foundation that goes in the frames, and you have a inner cover and a top cover, and you know, you have a smoker and at least a veil. Some people have full suits, but some people have at least a veil and maybe a coat to go with that. And there's ancillary stuff it takes to keep active with it. So even just the cost of a hive, a starter hive, is over $100 in most cases. And you know, it gets to be expensive if you want to start with maybe three or four or five hives. And best thing to do is really try to find a local bee club and become a member, and then you'll have access more so than most people to used equipment, or people get into it and find they're allergic maybe, or they just don't want to pursue it, or don't have time or whatever, and they may end up selling their equipment for you know, a very reasonable price afterwards. And you can sometimes see it in the paper around this time of year, in the newspaper, online, whatever, in your local online classified source, whatever that might be. But another way to get around all that, and this is not the conventional Langstroth type bee hive. This is not the fellow named actually a preacher and a beekeeper in the 1850s or 1840s, somewhere in that period. He patented what is known as the conventional Langstroth style hive. His name was B.B. Langstroth, and he developed the idea of the removable frames from the square boxes that we see in beekeepers in bee yards all across the country. And the idea was that it made it much easier for a commercial or even a home beekeeper to extract the honey. It made it safer and it made it more convenient to extract the honey, because the honey was put into cells that were built right in the removable frames, and you'd lift the top off the frame and lift the individual frames out and move them around and place them as they needed to be placed when you replaced them, and put the frames in the extractor to draw the honey out, and it made it a lot easier. And it also did not damage the comb that was left when you're harvesting the honey. But a lot of people these days really don't get into it just for the honey. A lot of people get into it now just for the pollination, and you'd be surprised at how many people aren't that interested in harvesting the honey. So especially if that's the case, if you just really need a bee yard nearby or a few hives to help pollinate your garden or your fruit trees, you know, your apples or your small fruits or whatever, or you just like the idea of helping out with some of the problems we're having with colony collapse disorder, it gets a little expensive to spend $100 a pop or more for a hive setup. So what I want to talk about today was what's called a top bar hive. And a top bar hive predates the conventional hive that we, you know, we all are familiar with by hundreds and hundreds of years. I don't really have any accurate information on how old they are, but my understanding is that they were developed in the Mediterranean, Cyprus, Greece, southern, you know, the southern European area there in the Mediterranean and the northern African area, and basically they were hives were man-made hives were made of baskets basically, and then sticks of wood were placed across the top of the baskets, and the bees were just left to their own devices, and they developed their comb naturally in the shape that they felt most comfortable with, and depending on the size of the basket, the beekeeper had, of course, both the colony of bees and the pollination that comes with it, and the ability to extract the honey. But when they did that, by lifting up those wooden bars across the top of the basket, when they did that, the only way to really extract the honey effectively is to crush the comb, the wax comb, and the honey that's on in it, all in one fell swoop. So basically, you put it in something like a mortar and pestle setup, a bowl or something with a, of course, this is with the bees off of it, with a little stick and just beat and smash the comb and the honey till the cap comes off. Each cell is capped, and there's honey in each cell, and there's hundreds and hundreds of cells in the hive. So when you smash the whole shooting match, the honey and the wax ooze out, and you can gather it at the bottom of the bowl or the container, and it can be filtered so you don't get all the wax in it. But as you know, anybody who's bought honey in the market or on the side of the road knows that it's just honeycomb. The comb in the jar is almost as popular as having the jar with the honey. So a lot of people like the comb too. So they like to know where it came from. They realize it's taken right from the hive that they got the honey from. So that's not the most efficient way to harvest honey. So after years of doing this, at I said in the point in the mid 19th century, the farmers with their ideas of greater efficiency and making more money off their product and whatever, this Langstroth fellow came up with the idea of at least he patented the idea. I understand that he may not have been the only one to come up with it, but he was the first one to patent it, so they put his name on it. And there were some European gentlemen, too, that also sort of simultaneously had developed the idea. But to make it more efficient to harvest the honey, then the frames could be reused, and it made it easier. And the other thing is it made it safer because there's what they call a bee space. That's the terminology they use. He had established or determined there was a certain space between each frame that they were most comfortable with in building their combs. And if the size of the box that he built and the number of frames that he put in it maintained that bee space, and you can actually remove each individual frame without disturbing the rest of them, and so the bees don't necessarily have to swarm out and bother the beekeeper. If they're comfortable with the beekeeper, which is what happens when you work with them for a while, and if you smoke them, which is basically a technique using a little handheld smoker that you blow a little smoke into the house there, into the hive, and or into the coop, Andy, actually, what they do is they think there's a forest fire, and they gorge themselves on honey because the honey is their food supply. So basically, even though it sounds like a horrible thing to do, you're sort of artificially forcing them to fill their bellies with honey, and when that happens, they can't bend their abdomens and they can't sting you. So if they can't sting you, there's no point in stinging you, and they really are so absorbed with feeding, stuffing themselves with honey and preserving as much as they can in their own stomachs and providing for the future of the colony, that they don't really worry about what you're doing. And really what you're doing is just removing a frame or two, and you're really not disturbing the other one. So they're it's a more comfortable operation for them, really, that way. And that made it safer for the beekeeper. And so we can see why the Langstroth-style frame hive is has become so popular. But to get back to our original discussion, the top bar hive, you know, had been around for a long time, and they're really, really inexpensive to build. You can using scrap lumber and real common stuff, you can probably throw one together for $10 or $20. And we had featured in our last issue here, or our current issue, a fellow from Missouri who did a little story on how he built his top bar hives, and he has an apple orchard. I believe it's apples and small fruit orchard, and he needed the bees for his pollination, so he didn't necessarily need the honey. And all he wanted was cheap bees. So he built a number of these hives and just gave us a little story on how he did it, what the measurements were and how big they were and all that, and what kind of wood he used and whatever. And now he has a, you know, low cost housing for his bee colonies. And you know, he, as I said, he doesn't need to harvest the honey, at least not this year or next year. I think he's just going to see how it goes. So he went ahead and did this. And, you know, when you compare $10 or $20 to, say, $110 or $120, that's a pretty big difference if you're going to set up a number of hives. So the deal is they sort of look like goat feeding troughs, really. I mean, it's a V-shape. It's a large, fairly large container, about 4 feet in length, in a V shape, but the sides are solid. So the narrow part is at the bottom, and the wide part is at the top, in the shape of a V. And they usually have legs on them, but they don't really need to have legs. The legs just make it comfortable to lift that whole box up off the ground a little bit to make it easier to work with the bees, because you still have to check on the bees. So there's two closed sides and there's two closed ends, and in one end and maybe in some other places, depending on the design, there's a slit. Sometimes people just drill a few holes in there, but they will need some ventilation in the summer. So there has to be some type of small opening for the bees to come in and out of the box. And at the top of the box, there are just bars. I think his design had 33 bars across the top from end to end. The bars are about an inch and, obviously I've got it right here, the bars are only about an inch and 3/8 wide, and so they're just stacked side by side along the top of the hanging from the top of, or resting on top of this trough, and there's a cover on top of that, and the bees just have then this enclosed chamber in there. It's shaped like a V, and they will build in totally free form style a comb that that attaches to the bottom side of that bar that's hanging from the top of the chamber, and they'll build it in the shape of a V, because that's the guidelines they've been given. They will build it up to the edge, and they'll put their honey in the cells, and, you know, presto, you have basically the same arrangement. Now, there are two drawbacks to this. One is that to remove a individual frame, you usually have to cut it with a knife, which there's a bee cutter's knife, or you can use a utility knife, but they tend to glue things up. They have a glue they make called propolis, and this is a very strong natural glue that they seal holes up with. They glue stuff in the hive together with it. If they feel they want to glue part of the comb to the wall, they will do that. So you may have to take the knife and cut it out to get in places to get the comb out, but yeah, that's, so be it. That's part of the deal. And so the other drawback, as I said before, is that you can't really just put these in an extractor, which works like a centrifugal spinner. Just you put the frames in a metal holder, and then you crank a crank, and it spins the frames around. Maybe it depends, two to eight at a time, depending on how big your extractor is, and the centrifugal force flings the honey off and leaves the frames intact. Well, in this design, the frames aren't supported by anything except that top piece of wood, so there's really no way to put them in the extractor. So you can't really use the extractor. So you have to smash the honey out of the comb with a pestle or with some device, and then it does destroy the comb. And the bees will rebuild. But again, it's an efficiency thing. If they have to spend time rebuilding the comb, that's the less time they have to make honey. But, you know, they can still do it, and they will do it. So if I've confused everybody totally, that's that wasn't my intent. But I know it's really quite simple. And you know, there's drawings and dimensions and a complete cutting list and all that. So it's a pretty good little article. And you know, I'm glad we ran it because we it really opens the door to a lot of people who may not want to jump right in and spend a couple hundred bucks up front, but they may be able to borrow a smoker and maybe borrow a head veil from somebody. And they may have to buy their bees, but if you know a beekeeper, you may have the opportunity to help him locate and harvest a wild swarm. That's one possibility, or possibly there's some people in your area who may be getting out of the bee business, or just people who have sometimes you'll find people who have bees nests in their homes or barns and they want them removed, and the beekeeper will come and you know, collect them. Some of these can be quite large colonies. In a traditional colony, there can be, in a regular box with a couple supers, there can be 50,000-60,000 bees in there. So you can imagine how many bees could be living in the rafters of a barn or in the walls of your home. So, you know, you split those up into a couple different families or colonies, and you've got a good number of bees.
Yeah, Richard, that's absolutely right. I mean, millions, well, hundreds of thousands of bees anyway. But one of the things, the advantages I've been reading about the top bar hive is that because the bees form their own space, their own self. And I kind of wondered about this. Do different strains of bees or different bee breeds, I guess they're bee breeds, do they have different sizes? You know, like some of the Carniolans are kind of smallish, whereas some of the African bees are a little bit larger. So I guess with the top bar, they form the space that fits their body size or bee size, I guess, and they're saying that might give some resistance to the mites and the hive collapse disorder. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah. Actually, the article just alluded to that. He didn't, you know, the point was about building this thing, so he didn't really get into a whole lot of discussion. But he mentioned that there is some evidence pointing to just exactly what you said. Because they're left up to their own natural devices, there's actually a bit of a tendency for them to feel better about their work, and they actually there may be some, you know, less of an inclination to be affected by some of that stress. Probably is it. And to answer your question initially, they're called races, and it is true. Yes, the Italian bees are a little different size than the Russian bees, and the Carniolans are, you know, again a little different, and some of the African bees are bigger. And I believe what happened is that in the days of Mr. Langstroth, the bees they were raising were probably Italians and the northern German bees, so sort of a black bee, and they were of about the same size. So he probably just using those bees, that was his guide. And if we were using a larger bee, I would imagine that spacing, giving him a little more space, might probably be the ticket. But I don't know. That makes sense though. And when you use a top bar hive, yes, it does. It lets them just build the suit, and they feel much more comfortable at it. And it's really sort of interesting. I did attend a workshop by a fellow, a fellow named Pauk, and I guess he lives in Virginia now. But he explained very briefly in this discussion he was giving about natural beekeeping, that, you know, if you hang a chain, you take a chain, just a loose chain, like it could be a necklace or you know, even a logging chain, whatever, but if you drape it and let it hang, it forms a certain shape. And if you hang it in two places, for example, or say two ends and then you have two more places in the center, the center piece will hang like in this deep, certain, you know, parabolic shape, and then the other two at each side of that will hang to a little bit of a different shape. But that's exactly the shape that the top bar hive bees will do until they actually hit the side of the box, and then they'll straighten out a little bit. But sometimes they don't always do that, and it seems like it's almost like a golden mean kind of a shape, and they will do that without one colony will do it, you know, miles from another colony. I mean, they all sort of do it, so it's sort of an interesting it must be in their DNA to have it done that way. That seems to be the kind of rounded, I don't know, a teardrop type of shape that they, well, of course, it's wider at the top, but they like that. They like that. We have a picture of it in the magazine. They seem to like that, and they're real comfortable with it. And I don't know if anybody's really experimented with the width of the bars, but I think that 1 3/8 or maybe 1.5 at the most is probably what most of the bar widths are. And all you really do is take a saw like a table saw, for example, and just cut a little curve or a slot in the bottom edge of the bar, and they just need something to grip for their glue to grip into. Some people cut two slots, give it a little more substance to it. But these hives are very common in Africa. In fact, if people were Googling it, it's called a Kenyan, like Kenya, Kenyan top bar hive, and the other style, which is slightly different, is called the Tasmanian top bar hive, and they're both, it's very similar. But I've seen wood cuttings keepers in Cyprus and Greece and I guess maybe Morocco. I'm not really sure what other African nations, but other places in the Mediterranean where they're all using sort of the same, the same style. In the later years, I'm assuming they went from, baskets to wood, and they could make them a little more sturdy and a little more weather resistant and all that, as people depended more and more upon the honey for, probably for commercial reasons. So, I just found it very interesting, and I think to the strict commercial type beekeeper, it wouldn't probably be that appealing. But for a home, homestead type person, or just somebody, a gardener or something, it probably would be a real good thing to look into, just for the cost aspects of it.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, Richard, how long did you say you've been a beekeeper?
Me, myself?
Yeah.
I think this is my fourth year now. I haven't really been doing it all that long, but, you learn everything every year, learn something new.
It's never ending.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we know so little. I mean, I was told by one of the university people, he may have been tongue-in-cheek, but he said we probably know about 5% of what there is to know about bees, and we know an awful lot about bees, but it ain't nothing, compared to what,
really?
What there probably is. I mean, he may have been just throwing a number out, but, I got the idea. I mean, we really, there's a lot to learn, and I think the whole colony collapse thing has really opened both academic researchers' eyes and just the general public's eyes into the fact that these are very important insects, and even though they're not the only pollinators we have on the planet, they're a very multi-useful pollinator, because they give us the honey plus the pollination. Whereas a lot of the other, there's wasps and spiders and all sorts of other insects that pollinate, but they don't have that broad usefulness as far as providing us with food and health and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Whisper, do you have any questions for Richard?
Not in the pleasant. We do need to take a commercial break, though. I did want to tell him that we did have a member in the chat room who had posted just a few minutes ago. She just signed up for a one-year subscription of Back Home Magazine on your website. So that was just posted in the chat room. So we thank her for doing that. So I want to remind everybody as we go to break that if you do like to hear when Richard is on and you value that information, a lot of this comes directly from articles that are in his magazine, and you can subscribe at backhomemagazine.com. You can go right there and subscribe. There's also a telephone number there you can call and talk to a real live person here in the United States that can take your order. But exactly,
right.
Always important. But, you can do that, backhomemagazine.com, and you can just extend what Richard tells us twice a month here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. So stay with us. We'll be back right after this short break.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality built chicken coops for every size flock and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Today's secret password is bedding. Today's secret password is bedding. Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today is, of course, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. We're talking about bee coops today, and if you're not sure what a,
That's
bee
so
coop
funny.
Is, it cracks me up. It just sounds funny. So, but yeah, how to build our own coop? Goodness gracious! Our own hive in our backyard, and I would honestly love to have bees for the garden and all the great things that come from and for bees. But and maybe one day I'll just get over my I wouldn't call it a fear. It's just I'm not a bee person. Some people aren't spider persons. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't, you know, mice or snakes or whatever. And it's just bees and I just don't get along. And this makes my point here. After being in the medical field for many years, both being an EMT and a paramedic and a firefighter and an American Heart Association official training center and whatnot, I would always train this that
I would have the class I was training, whether it be doctors or nurses or corporations or whatever. I would ask the question when we got into our first aid portion. I would say, who in here is allergic to bees? And I'd always have, you know, a handful raise their hand. And then I would say, okay, who in here is not allergic to bees? And then the others would raise their hands. And I would be very careful at that point to go ahead and explain to them that they still need to be very careful, because I have personally been involved with at least two incidents where these two people are now dead as a doornail because they got stung by a bee and had been stung many a times before in their life with no problems at all. But for whatever reason, they got stung by a bee this time and are now dead because of it. So, I don't know if they were wasps, yellow jackets, hornets, whatever they were. But I'll take this as my little public service announcement here as a former, you know, healthcare provider that, even if you do get stung by a bee and you've never had a reaction ever in your life before, I would truly still recommend monitoring yourself closely for maybe an hour. Check for any swelling, check for difficulty breathing, check for the tongue, feeling like your tongue's swelling up or your throat's closing up or whatever the case may be. It never hurts to have an EpiPen around, both for you and your kids. You do need a prescription for that. You should be able to get that pretty easily from your doctor and then pick those up at the drugstore. But I just want my point here is that just because you may have been stung many times in your life but never had a problem doesn't mean you couldn't get stung right now and then be dead in 5 minutes from a reaction. I've been involved in cases like that twice. Both men were in their 40s and 50s and had been stung many, many a times before. Not to have you run out and be scared of bees, but just want to make sure you're aware of that. And it's probably rare, but want to make sure you to be aware of that particular instance. So just be aware of that. But I would like to, and I don't know of any place in the country, and I've mentioned this before when we've talked about bees with Richard, if there's a bee service. I mean, if I would love to have bees, if I never got real comfortable with it, for somebody to come by, just like if they were going to come by and take care of my swimming pool and have a pool boy, to come by and have a bee boy, and they would come by and and take care of the bee. I would benefit from the honey and everything about the bees, but I would pay a monthly service for them to come out and then take care of the bees for me. So I would consider that, sure. And then as they did that, I would participate as much as I felt comfortable. Maybe eventually I would say, okay, thanks for your help, and I'm going to take over now. But I thought that would be kind of interesting. So there are bee services out there, it says, about $500 a year, which is, what, $40 a month, $43 a month, something like that. So
I might go into business for that.
I was going to say that was posted in the chat room. I haven't heard anything, but that's pretty neat. So, welcome back, Richard. Thank you very much for joining us today. It looks like we have about 8 minutes. Maybe if there are any questions in the chat room while Richard finishes up here, you can post your questions in the chat room, or maybe we can squeeze in a call, 347-637-3237, 347-637-3237. 37. So give us a call, post your question in the chat room if you have a question for our guest today, Richard Friedenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Richard, thank you very much for coming and joining us today.
Yeah. No, I just to pick up there about the stings, you're absolutely correct. There's always people I hear of locally, and I'm sure it's the same for anywhere, but people get started and they get stung and there's a horrible reaction. Or they have been working with bees for a while and then they get stung every year. I get stung every year. I mean, everybody does.
Sure.
Any beekeeper who says they've never been stung, either it doesn't have any feeling in their skin or isn't telling the truth.
Right.
I tend to find out that at the beginning of the year they're a little. I guess they're nervous, or they're a little antsy, and they're sort of a new crop of bees, and if you disturb the hive at the wrong time of day, or people don't realize the weather's if there's a storm coming and the barometer drops, is low pressure, they get aggravated.
Oh boy, do they?
So yeah, they do, and they can sting. And the thing is that I've found, and I think people will verify this, that the stings become less irritating or less painful as the season goes on. But again, to sort of reinforce what Andy said, that's not a sign to say, oh, gee, I can get stung. Then I can get stung, 20 times a year, and it doesn't matter. I believe that in many people it does build up. It doesn't build up so much a tolerance. It builds up to a point where any additional stings are what sets it off, sets off a bad reaction. And so the idea is not to really or try not to get stung much, if at all, by using the protective equipment. And I see people working with the hives with no gloves, nothing more than a veil, because there are things around the eyes, and those are very, very painful, and they can also be very, very dangerous. So at least covering the face and head is what's important. But for the most part, if you move slowly and you smoke the hive and you don't do anything unwarranted, like when people get excited and they start swatting, blowing on them, mm-hmm. swatting at them, and that kind of thing is really what aggravates them. So by moving slowly and not doing any of those things, they will come to investigate around you. It may land on your skin. They're crawling insects. We think of them as flying insects, but they're just as much crawling insects. So people also have to be aware that they may be crawling up your shoe, and they may come up your socks, and so you get them under your pants leg, and they really, that'll create a problem because you're gonna squish them and they'll sting. They also, if they get in your hair, they can't get out. They tend to get hung up in your hair, and if they do that, they may sting your scalp. So
I wouldn't have that problem.
They could get in your bee bonnet. I've had get in my bee hat, and oh my god, it's just awful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I walk away.
Don't panic.
Away,
is the main thing. Don't panic.
I have walked away from the yard. From the VR, just took the hat off. Go far enough away. If they follow you more than 10 or 15 feet from the hive, if they're aggravated, there's a problem and something's wrong. You've really, really upset them, or there's something wrong with your hive where they're annoyed. But before I forget it, I did want to mention to Andy, paying for the service is one option, but I mean, around here, I believe you could probably find a beekeeper that would be more than happy to set up his hives. Mm-hmm. Either her hives if you've got a decent solar exposure, mm-hmm. and a good garden, mm-hmm. for nothing. I mean, if you start wanting honey, I mean, probably would end up giving you some for mm-hmm. the privilege of having set the thing up in your yard. But up to a point. But there's always folks looking. Always beekeepers are always looking for good new places to
good
put their hives. Yeah, their yards, because there's a lot of reasons why they some places change. I mean, building occurs and subdivisions come up, and people have to move their hives someplace else, and in bigger numbers, it's not always, beekeepers are not always welcome, like in commercial areas, around in town, you don't want to have 20 hives and right next to a shopping area, that kind of thing. And around swimming pools, I think we've already talked about that, they will tend to use a swimming pool as a water source, which aggravates people. So but I think, one or two boxes in your garden there would be something that a beekeeper might be interested in.
I'll have to check into that, absolutely. And like I said, it's just me and my wife and a little CW on the way, so it's not like we're using a lot of honey, that's for sure. I mean, we do love it, but I never really thought about that. Then we could get the benefits of that as well. So
Yeah, I would just check your local extension agent, see who the bee club, who's involved with the bee club, and you can just send them an email or go down there at one of the meetings and just ask.
Sounds good. We had a question in the chat room. Was there any definite answer? Did anybody ever really find out why we've had this disappearance of bees? Have you heard any kind of final answer?
There has been a. Now I forget the scientific terms of the names of the problems, but basically it was a combination of a virus and a disease that they seem to trigger off each other. Now in the scientific community, and I'm sorry I don't have the references. I mean, I just off the top of my head, but in the scientific community, that seemed to resolve the issues because it's the only two things that showed up consistently in all the studies of every evidence of the colony collapsed hives. However, in Europe, in England, especially in the UK, there's still some questions as to whether that's really, really it, absolutely. And their opinion, more and more I hear, is that stress is also playing a huge role, and they can adapt to stress up to a point, but if it happens too quickly and doesn't ease off, if the thing's causing the problem doesn't back off at all, then it's very hard to deal with the stress. So the stress I'm referring to is basically a lot of it has to do with them moving around so much. A lot of the beekeepers are there for commercial purposes to pollinate apricots and apples and all this prunes and whatever, especially in California and Florida, they just bring hives on tractor trailer trucks and set the bees loose, and they come back in after they've pollinated, and then they move them to the next place. Well, bees are very, very locally, they're locavores, they're very locally oriented, and they have to get their bearings, and once they've done that, they're comfortable. But if you move them every few days or whatever, it's very hard on them. So that has to play a role. But what they were finding is that this virus and the other disease was working in concert to bother them. But again, that could have been as a result of a reduced resistance to like when we get stressed, we tend to get sick too, and that's that could be it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's another. I just wanted to add this comment too, Richard. Since you said when bees get stressed, they can get sick, and when people are stressed or when they're sick, they're more apt to have adverse reactions to bee stings as well. And I know one beekeeper that was at the end of the day, he was tired, hadn't eaten all day. He got a sting right in his forehead and went into an anaphylactic reaction. His doctor told him he'd never be able to work as bees again, but he didn't believe it. And he slowly, then after he recovered, started stinging himself with the apitherapy with bees, and he got back to being a full-time beekeeper again. So because you're allergic once doesn't mean that you're allergic for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I
just
think
had
people
to throw
get
that
scared.
In.
That's good, and yes. I've heard that too. I mean, it's also up to your personal physiology, I'm sure. But I've heard that people actually take the precaution of getting the EpiPens and even Benadryl. I mean, that's a good backup. I mean, just a little allergy pills will help in an emergency.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I keep it on hand here, even for the dogs. If they should for some reason get stung badly, I'll give them some Benadryl. But one of the things about chickens, I've noticed when they get stung, I've never seen a chicken go into an anaphylactic reaction.
No.
Either their feathers or something, they seem to be a little bit immune to it. So, okay, well, Richard, thank you so much for being on the show here. We've been talking with Rich. Yeah, it's been fascinating. Whisper, do you have any other questions or comments before we go to trivia today?
That was mine about the disappearance of the bees. I know there's been a lot of conspiracy theories about that, so I wanted to hear if there was any updates on that. Thank you very much, and it was wonderful information as always. Want to remind everybody again, I know you enjoy when Richard's on twice a month, and so you can continue to learn from him and his great publication, Back Home Magazine, by going to backhomemagazine.com and subscribing. It's very affordable, and the information you get really out of the magazine is priceless. So we hope that you'll do that as well. And we thank Richard for coming on, taking time out of his busy schedule twice a month to come on the radio show and share his knowledge. So, Pat?
Absolutely. And the 800 number to subscribe to Back Home Magazine is 800-992-2546. 800-992-2546, or you can do it through backhomemagazine.com. So, Richard, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. It's been absolutely, yet again, fascinating and informative.
Okay, well thanks for having me on, Pat and Andy, and we'll see you on April 28th again for the next show.
Sounds great,
absolutely.
Yes. Thank you very much. And lots of folks, if you're not in the chat room, Richard, are saying thank you very much. And they learned a whole lot, and they appreciate you coming on as well. But it is now time for Chicken Trivia. And today being Thursday is brought to you by Critter-Cages.com. They have so much stuff, whether you have rabbits or gerbils or rats or anything. Any type of little critter, they've got a home for it, and toys and snacks and treats and you name it. So you want to go check them out, critter-cages.com. Today's prize is a very nice brooder lamp with a dimmer switch and a 100-watt bulb. A very nice top-of-the-line brooder lamp with a dimmer switch and a 100-watt bulb for that. Looks like Pat has the question today, so I'm going to pick the caller. Caller number 9. Caller number 9, if you know the answer to the following question, you'll call 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237 if you know the answer to the following question from my co-host, Pat Foreman.
Okay. Well, we'll see if people were listening today or not. Whisper. The question is, what is a top bar beehive? What is a top bar beehive? I was going to ask what a bee coop was, but I thought that might get some odd responses. So we'll stick with what is a top bar beehive. Okay. If you know the answer, call in. And caller number 9, I believe.
Yep, caller number 9. Eat Local Texas put a question in the chat room I will address. Can anyone give me a specific or personal experience that cedar can kill chickens? Let me give you the factual information here, Eat Local Texas, because I'm going to be sharing that tonight with our webinar, which I always do. There is scientific data out there regarding the cedar and small rodents, mice, little rats, small little rodents. When using cedar, the odor that's released from the cedar has a toxin in it. They breathe it in. Their liver works over, and then that toxin gets in the bloodstream. And then the rodents, the small rodents, their liver works overtime to try to get rid of that toxin, and then they end up dying of liver failure. It's not necessarily a respiratory problem that they get from breathing in that toxin. The respiratory problem doesn't kill them, but it's actually it's a liver issue because they breathe in the odor. There's a toxin in that odor. It gets absorbed in the bloodstream. The liver tries to clean that out, and they die of liver failure. But there is no documentation. So we take that as chicken, as spreading the chicken love, and we say, look, why, since there's so many other things out there, like pine shavings, some people don't like that, and aspen shavings, which is probably the very best thing to use, though that's a little bit more expensive. Though there's no specific studies about chickens and cedar, because there are for small rodents and whatnot. But since there are other things available to use it, why use cedar? Why even take that chance regarding that? Now, using cedar for a chicken coop, or maybe if you have cedar around your mulch, probably would never have a problem in the world. But the issue there is when the baby chicks are only 2 and 3 inches above these cedar shavings you might use in your brooder, for example, that we don't know. There's no scientific data, but we feel that, hey, why take that chance if there's other things that you can use that would be better? That's my take on that, basically, regarding that. So let me get over here to the switchboard. It lit up like crazy, and so we're going to go to caller number 9. Calling in from area code 812. 812, you're live on the air with Andy and Pat. Call number 9, state your name, and tell us where you're calling from, please.
I'm Naomi.
Hey,
and I'm
Naomi.
From Nashville, Indiana.
Indiana. Naomi.
All right, Naomi, another Hoosier.
Yeah, actually pretty close to Bloomington.
Oh, well, I hope I meet you when I'm there on the 20th, because you can come to the Indiana University, the Earth Week going on
I'll
there.
I'll have to look into that and see. So it's about 45 minutes away, so not a big drive. So.
Great. Well, I hope I get to meet you anyway. So the question is, what is a top bar beehive? Naomi, do you know what that is?
A top bar beehive, instead of having the frames where you have the honeycombs, has bars. So the bees will create the combs hanging from the bars, and you'll have to destroy the combs to get to the honey.
Excellent. You listen today. I'll take that answer. Whisper, that's a winner. Well done.
Oh, yeah, Naomi.
Very good. All righty, Naomi, congratulations. You've won that awesome prize from critter-cages.com. If you'll just send us over an email with your name, shipping address, and phone number, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.com. Name, address, phone number, and that's shipping address, name, shipping address, and phone number. And put in the title of the email under the subject matter. Put in Critter Cages Prize. That would be great. So we'll get that over to Carl at CritterCages.com. So thank you very much for listening today, folks. Tomorrow is Fun Friday. Tons of prizes to give away tomorrow. We hope you'll tune in. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/The Chicken Whisperer. Pat, take it away.
Okay. Well, today our special guest is Richard Frudenberger. He is the publisher and technical writer for Back Home Magazine. And we were talking about how to make a simple top bar beehive. And, of course, thanks to all our sponsors for their support. Where would we be without them? And, of course, Andy, I'm looking forward to developing this bee coop. I think that might be a patentable idea.
Yeah, and a bee, bee. And a bee tractor.
And a bee tractor, right, okay. So anyway, appreciation to our chat room chicken ears and all our listeners for clucking and buzzing along today. And, of course, thanks to blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, the chat, and the video services. Blessings to all. We love you all so much, you poultry pioneers, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody. ¶¶